everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Book Legion podcast. I am Mark. I am back. And Clay, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing really, really good. It's been a kind of crazy week here at the house, but, you know, I didn't really get to read these books until last night and a little bit during the day, but it's been good.
Sweet, man.
Really been enjoying it.
No, I hear you. Talking about a hectic week. I mean, I just got back. Well, first I want to say thanks and shout out to Jake for actually filling in for me last week when he was doing the show with you.
Yes, great job.
I was at MegaCon Orlando, so I was, you know, I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, drove all the way down to South Florida, spent some time with my family, then I went up to Orlando, and dude, that was awesome. It was really cool. Like, I hung out there Thursday, Friday, which is good because those are usually the slowest days in the con. Then I was there, you know, like Saturday early morning, just because there was an event that I wanted to attend. But mm-hmm. besides that, I mean, I didn't have to deal with any of the craziness, which is really Saturday. Because the good thing is that usually when you get into a con as press, well, at least this is how MegaCon does it, you can actually get inside the facility earlier before anybody else can. So you have like an hour to 2 hours of just you being in there with the other exhibitors.
Yeah.
So I love that. Like that's a big deal. So I really enjoyed it. But talking about, I mean, this is now my third con meeting like Tom King. But honestly, I can never get bored talking with him. Like I loved it. Had him sign a couple of stuff for me. I know I hooked up some of the writers on Comic Book Legion on our website and, you know, kind of like our chat with some stuff to see if they were interested, and they did. I was able to get it. I was able to meet Mitch Gerard, which was really cool. I had him, I know on my social media, on my Twitter, at Mark Fossus, I posted like him signing the Mr. Miracle trade.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm not cool like Kevin where he has all three, but I have the Barnes & Noble exclusive, and now I have this recent one that has all like the Dark Side is going everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I got that one, and I got him to sketch a Mr. Miracle inside, which was really cool. Man, who else did I meet? I mean, Brian Azzarello was awesome. I was kind of intimidated because he looks kind of like a Shaolin monk, and he looks, you know, in the sense that he's very, like, reserved. But you never know if he's, like, I don't know if he's angry or if he's happy. So, because I remember when one time in MegaCon, I met Greg Rucka, and everybody has talked about, like, what a great experience they have with Greg Rucka. But I think when I got there, he just got out of, like, the airplane, and this dude just looked totally tired and not wanting to, like, deal with anyone, even though I saw him the next day and he was nice. But I was like, it was kind of like, it's always nerve-wracking meeting a creator because you don't know exactly. You know, you don't know them, so you don't know how they're going to react. So it's kind of like you want to show excitement because you're a fan of theirs, but you don't want to be too overwhelming where they're like, dude, you're kind of over-exaggerating here. So with Azzarello, you know, that was a big deal. I mean, I asked him some questions about Suicide Squad with his future.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
he did mention he's like, wait until Heroes in Crisis, which I was like, what? But, I mean, you got PR there, so, like, a lot of these writers are very tight-lipped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, comic book writers aren't like Mark Ruffalo that just spoils everything. Like, I haven't found a Mark Ruffalo yet.
You know, I want to be, and I know this will somewhat have a negative connotation to some people, I want to be the scooper for DC Comics. That's what I want to be.
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a scooper, it's just... I think the issue with scoopers is that, you know, they tease even though they really have no information. They just heard something or read something on Reddit, and then they're just a douche about it if they're wrong.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're like, you know, okay, I was wrong. All right. Hey.
No, I would totally own up to it, but I would really like to be that person that kind of gets that insider trade information. It's just like, oh, hey, you know.
I can't see, like, an actual... fan them giving that kind of job to like an actual fan. I think we'll be like, what? that's awesome. I think they'll need somebody that probably just doesn't care or is like a fan of like the medium in general, but that they won't like they won't be interested at all of someone who's a hardcore fan.
I know. Yeah. I the responsibility would just, you know,
because that's like now, you know, news and you have a whole bunch of people in your circle that are just huge comic geeks and you can't talk about it.
Well, I mean, in a way, we are or have the potential to be scoopers just because we do technically get books a little bit early. But I mean,
as yeah, far but as I mean, but is that a scooper in terms of books, or do you mean more in terms of like news?
See, I feel like more in terms of news, though. Like, as far as, like, you know, we know what is going on that current week or, you know, the week prior, just for a couple days. But I would like to know.
I mean, like, to some friends, we can be like prophets if we want to. Just do just do a couple of bets. I'm like, I bet you that this is going to happen. Like, just bet like $50 a book or something. You're like, how do you do this?
Prophet. No, I would like, for instance, you know, with the first book we're going to be talking about, Action Comics, you know, we're on 10/11 today. I would like to know the information of Action Comics 1025, you know?
Oh, okay. So you want like the Mel Kiper board. You want the board of like Mach 1, kind of like what was the entire... Oh, man.
But
am I going to know what's happening in the other stuff? Or just tell me what... Because the thing is, like, I hate spoilers. Like, I hate for something to be ruined because then none of the buildup means anything to me.
Well, for me, I feel like what you could look at it as is almost like a... what do they call it? Man, what's the term called? Not guideline, but it's a
like bullet points. Just like
bullet points of like, you know, this event, this major event, and then this finale.
Okay,
but like have it like somewhat like just know like this is completely you know fake. I'm not giving anybody actual news for this important run of, let's say, Batman Tom King.
Okay.
You know, looking at his outline, you would see for, you know, his entire run, you see Gotham Girl and Gotham first arc, and then you see proposal, then you see wedding, and then question mark, and then you see Nightmares, then you see Flashpoint Batman, and then you see City of Bane, and you're just like, and this is like coming to you maybe issue number 5 of the Tom King run, and you see this outline, you're like, wait, what proposal? Who's he proposing to? What in the world is going on? Oh,
okay.
Like,
yes, like that would be cool.
So,
because that's better, because I feel like right now, because of social media and everything, I feel like fans just already in general know too much, and I feel like in ways that ruins experiences. Obviously we have the control of our destiny and what information we want to receive, obviously. But I think that, you know, if you want to just converse with people that you want to converse or, you know what's going on with creators, it's just, you know, movies have 7 trailers. Everything that's just like what it is now. Like now you get like 8 exclusive movie clips where then when I see it in the movie, I'm like, all right, I can look at my phone for a second. I already seen this part like 6 times. Like that's just how it feels. So, but with little bullet points, I'm cool with that. Like I would like that too.
Yeah. Mm. I think it would be interesting just to be able to like know like, holy crap, something like this big is happening, even if it's like a minor spoiler. It's like, how is that even possible? And then you see through the run how that is going up to it.
Yeah. And like, yeah, with me, I would love to know with creators, how long is their arc going to be? How long are they on the book? Because to me, reading a... I'm trying to see, like, a creator. I don't know. I'm just going to throw Green Lanterns out there or whatever. And you have, like, okay, it's like a Sam Humphries. He's on the book at the start. But if it's, like, if I know he's only on there for 8 issues, like, if I knew that off the bat, then, honestly, I don't even know if I would be that invested in wanting to read it. Because... I like knowing that there's a creator in it for, like, the long haul, because I want, like, a long vision. I don't want, like, if it's a maxi series, I at least know there's a beginning and an end. Mm-hmm. But if I know that there's a writer with, you know, like that, and you're on it for 8 issues, I just know I'm literally getting a glorified story arc.
You know, kind of like how the actual book, The Green Lanterns, it was... It brought to us as readers as this maxi series, 12 issues, with the potential to have more. And you're right. You know, for me, knowing it's only 12 issues can kind of be a little disappointing because, you know, for us as readers, we kind of want the ongoing series, especially for bigger characters like Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, things like that. But... I definitely would like to see that a little bit more, you know, for, you know, with, you know, everybody's asking the question, how long has Bendis on Action Superman? We have no idea. It's been a little over a year and he's only 11, 12 issues in.
Well, if you include like Man of Steel, cause he did have those 6 issues, but I see what you mean. The thing with like Bendis is, Bendis, I feel like whatever he's gone on has always been in it for the long haul. He's not like a mini series kind of guy. He's a guy that likes the slow burns and builds a huge... Everything that he's done has been very big.
Yeah.
So I wasn't worried with that because I kind of knew what I was getting with. And for the most part, I've enjoyed his Superman stuff. Mm-hmm. More action than Superman. I think... I mean, there's kind of like when you're looking at the divide, and that's kind of like leading into the book that we're going to be talking about first, which is Action Comics 1011. There is that divide when it comes to Brian Michael Bendis that either people absolutely just hate what he's doing with Superman and they want him off the book, or you have like, I don't see like many fans that just love everything that he's doing. It's like you have this or that. And I mean, I follow, like, pretty much the majority of my follows are all, like, DC related. Mm. And so, like, I would like to say that my circle around DC Comics is rather big. And it's usually, can't stand them, get them off the book. I like action, but not so much Superman. Or I like Superman more than action. But I haven't heard much praise about Rogel Czar. So,
yeah.
So I would think that Action Comics right now has been the driving force of what he's been doing. But, I mean, I'm pumped. I can't wait for, like, Event Leviathan. Knowing the fact that it's with him and Alex Maleev, that's even better. Say it again?
Well, I think that's the majority of why everybody seems to lean on action a little bit more. Because from action, we're getting an actual event from DC. And it'll be Bendis' first event.
Which makes sense, but, because Action Comics is really the flagship title. Superman isn't.
Yeah.
Just like Detective Comics, in reality, and it should be the more important story in Batman than the Batman issue. But I think that, you know, I think little by little, maybe, because when Snyder started, Batman, the Batman solo title has just been much better than Detective Comics.
Yeah, I just think that Batman is such a, like, a bigger name than he is, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's how the solo title for Batman has just evolved into this, like, enormous thing for people. So I completely understand it.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts here with Leviathan Rising? We the book starts with kind of like the cliffhanger where Superman found that Leviathan creature that we looked into. The previous issue pretty much threw him into space, and he kind of had that blue essence while Lois was down.
Well, I actually want to rewind real quick.
Okay.
And I want us to look at the very first page of this book. It's where you see the iPad or the tablet. You see all the sticky notes. But there's a very important piece of detail in this page. If you look at the very bottom of this page, you see a picture of, for us as readers, is actually a panel of what we saw in Year of the Villain,
mm-hmm.
the one shot. And we see the explosion.
Man, well, you had to get ahead of me, man. I want to talk about the book first. I felt like this was going to be such a bigger thread. I was going to ask you this after.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, let's rewind again. Go back to you.
No. Whoa. But you already got here. So, no, that's fine. What were you looking at?
Well, a lot of people in the circles of where I've been on Twitter and what we've been talking about is one of the major plot points in Action and Superman was where it was continuity-wise. And one of the biggest mishaps and sidetracks that Bendis kind of led forward with his, I believe, Superman run was a red hair Barry Allen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure since then he has said, okay, that was a mistake. But before he said that, he had said, hey, just wait until Doomsday Clock is finished, mm-hmm. and you'll understand. No one understood what that meant, especially since Doomsday Clock is taking until 2025.
Yeah.
But this tells us right here that the events of Action are now before, like, ahead of time of Snyder's Justice League.
Yeah.
And from what Snyder has said when Justice League started is that Snyder's Justice League run is actually after Doomsday Clock. So we get a little bit more of a, you know, constant timeline or a continuity with everything here. So that does answer some stuff for people who are paying attention to these small panel things like this.
Yeah. That was big. Because I figured like this panel was going to be the thing that we were going to talk about the most in this uh-huh. issue. Because in reality, there wasn't much. I mean, I know that you kind of mentioned before the show started that there were some nitpicks in regards to like dialogue. Mm-hmm. But in this issue, I mean, one of my biggest things was, I'm a fan of Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like I liked his ever since I saw him in Grayson. I've always been a fan of his, and I was actually really interested to see how this was going to be handled with him realizing that what was his name? Was it Chad?
Chaz.
Chaz was Superman, and now he has, you know, Lois Lane, and I was curious because I figured this was going to be something that was going to be interesting. But it kind of felt like, you know, what you were mentioning with the Year of the Villain with Malcolm Merlyn, that it kind of just felt like, you know, this...
It did not feel like his character, right?
Yes. So it kind of had like another moment like that where it was just a little too quick. And Lois got this information a little... I'm like, all right. I'm like, okay, well, that was... Because it kind of just felt like last issue...
What kind of spy are you, Tiger?
Because now last issue just feels absolutely useless. Because in reality, the only thing that we should really get out of that book from last time, if this was how quick Tiger's thing was going to be, is, okay, I guess, you know, Amanda Waller is in the fortress, Jimmy kind of called her out, and now we find out he got punched, the fortress has kind of, like, been taken over. Like, it feels like that's really, like, all we should have really taken from, besides, you know, that Kate Spencer stuff. Or like beforehand, like with was that a last issue with that really nice opening with a Director Bones?
Yes, that was before, and this is the aftermath when the Metropolis Special Units comes barging into her door.
Yeah, and it was really nice to see. This is Lois is still Andy at this moment. So it was nice to see Superman and Andy, because it was nice little connecting points getting, like, Helena in there. Because, you know, she obviously has a lot of connections with Spiral. So she kind of wants to get a little bit more of an idea of what exactly is going on, because this threat is big. And it was kind of funny because here they're talking about letting Amanda Waller, like, oh, Amanda's in our fort. She's like, wait, you let Amanda Waller alone in your house? And that's kind of like when we're seeing this. So now the aftermath, you're seeing now the fortress. Jimmy got punched in the head and he was kind of knocked out from what we know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you know there's more to Jimmy's story, because if not, we wouldn't be getting a maxi series with him.
Plot twist: Jimmy is Leviathan.
Dude, can you imagine that?
That would actually be kind of insane.
I mean, it would be. I don't know. Considering everything that you know about Jimmy, is like, you know Jimmy as Superman's pal. So that's like, well, what's a bigger heel turn, Jimmy or Daenerys? I don't even watch Game of Thrones, but, you know, everybody talks about it. Like, that was, like, the biggest twist.
Neither do I. I don't watch it either. I'm actually going to pre-order my complete series, because I know it's good enough to own, but I just don't know what the show is about. So
I saw, like, the first three seasons, and then I had a kid. And then for some reason, it's just, like, the little bit of time that I have to watch TV, it's so limited that I can't watch what Game of Thrones is. So it's kind of like I had to stop. But I mean, I do eventually want to get, I've just pretty much have muted everything with Game of Thrones, because since I haven't watched the show, I don't want to get spoiled by it. But I did get spoiled by that, because I was at my parents' house in Florida, and that's all they watch. So I'm literally reading comics in the room next door. But they said, this is the one thing they said, if we're watching Game of Thrones in our house,
okay, wait. Spoiler warning, guys.
No, I'm not going to say a spoiler. Okay. I'm just saying that they're like, when it's in our house, we're watching the show, we put the volume at 100, and there's going to be a lot of screaming, a lot of people just talk. Like, that's what happens. It's a very intense moment. She's like, Mark, what we do with Game of Thrones is what you used to do when 24 was on TV. I'm like, okay. I
love that show.
Yeah, like Jack Bauer, he's my spirit animal. So I'm like, okay, I understand. But because of that, I hear a whole bunch of stuff happen during Game of Thrones, man. And I'm like, balls. It wasn't the finale, it was the one beforehand.
Oh, okay.
The one that everybody started writing petitions for, apparently. Yeah. Anyways, so what do you think's Amanda's role here?
I feel like it would be too much on the nose that she was Leviathan,
or she took place in it, like some kind of role. Yeah,
but at the same time, I could very much see it to where she somehow fell into Leviathan to find out what their, you know, bigger plan is. So I can see it both ways, to be completely honest, because it is Amanda Waller. She is one that is okay for getting her, you know, hands a little bit dirty. There's no problem in that for her. But with Leviathan here and this story being such a mystery and nobody knows what's going on, it's really hard to say. Like, I would genuinely say this about Brian Michael Bendis. I have not been enjoying, and you've known this, I have not been particularly enjoying this action in Superman run.
What? No, I'm joking.
But with the mystery part of who Leviathan is, what they're trying to accomplish, he's done a pretty good job.
Well, have you read his Marvel stuff, or at least his earlier Marvel stuff? Like, do you know Bendis's style?
I read the first three volumes of the first Ultimate Spider-Man with Peter Parker. That's basically it.
Okay, well, Ultimate Spider-Man, that's like his, that's like up there with like amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing. Okay. Okay, because no, the reason why I'm asking, because like, for example, like, I don't know if you've seen like when me and Kevin or like Comics Dude, when we're kind of talking about like Dark Reign.
See, I never read Dark
Reign. See, because like what he did with Marvel at that time was, what he's doing with Superman right now, Superman in Action Comics, that's pretty much what he did with Marvel, but with the Avengers, the new Avengers, I mean, Dan Slott was under the Dark Reign banner, kind of like a Rebirth banner, Dark Reign.
Uh-huh.
But Dan Slott was doing Mighty Avengers. You had Thunderbolts. You had the Dark Avengers. Like, there, it was huge, and this was all, like, revolving. Like,
and then after Dark Reign was... wasn't that Age of Ultron?
Mm-hmm.
Or was that a little bit after?
No, I think Age of Ultron was a little bit after.
Okay, because I have read Age of Ultron also.
Okay, yeah, but... No. This was like Bendis' own thing, where he had an entire pocket. Like, he pretty much had the Marvel Universe on, like he owned it, pretty much. And it's like every story in a way had to kind of, like, connect. But there was, like, 7 or 8 titles that were 100% like his, that he would be kind of taking the responsibility and directions for it. And it had to do a lot with the aftermath of, like, Civil War, the first one. So, and it was incredible, but it has this kind of vibe to it, which is, it's a slow burn. There's, you know, some little polarizing kind of things, but I feel like ultimately it kind of goes back to, like, what fans are comfortable with. But beforehand, he kind of has to do some of these little things, which I'm good for, because this feels very Bendis-y. This feels more Bendis-y than Superman, honestly. So that's why I think it's very strong, because I think if you know his writing, then, or for the majority, like, his body of work, this feels very Bendis-y, and that's why I really like it, because I like and I trust the decisions that he's made. Even though I can't say he's the same writer he is now compared to what he was 15 years ago, but I would say that, you know, for the most part, I'm pretty high on it. Do you think, just on a side note, this has nothing to do with what we were just talking about, with Jimmy Olsen, does Jimmy Olsen kind of feel like an 80s character?
He does a little bit, and I think it mainly has to do with Bendis's voice for Jimmy. I think whenever it comes to Bendis's idea of DC Comics, from what I've gotten from Man of Steel, from what I've gotten through Superman and Action Comics, Bendis loves the Silver Age of comics, I feel like. And so Jimmy very much feels like he has literally been scooped up out of the Silver Age and put into this modern age of comics.
Because there was this moment that when he's talking to Clark about, you know, kind of like revealing if he ever felt like he needed to, you know, that kind of stuff, he's like, you know, you can trust me. And Superman, he's like, Jimmy, to protect you, that's the only reason I keep anything from you, because I trust you completely. And he says something along the lines like, boy, I really needed to hear that. And just because I heard boy, I kind of felt like I was hearing, like, Casey Kasem on radio or something. I was like, boy!
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, the some of the dialogue, I wrote the notes down here. There was some dialogue that made no sense to me, but there was a lot of dialogue that was just super cheesy. And that's what, you know, the boy, you know, I really needed to hear that. And then at the very end, where Lois and Superman are talking, and it goes into that, like, kind of build up where you see Superman on top of the page, Lois in the middle, and Jimmy at the bottom at the very end. Like, that whole setup just felt really cheesy, and I'm just like, oh, man, if the book hadn't have ended like that, I think I would have actually liked it. But just those small little things, it's just like, I feel, like I said, Bendis is too caught up into some of the things that he used to read as a kid that he's trying to bring in here, which some people can do really, really well. I just think Bendis needs a little bit more time with these characters to be able to do that and make it feel not forced.
Gotcha. I mean, that last part didn't really bother me. It just kind of felt like a little commercial, like an ad. Yeah. Like, I can see that being like a poster for Leviathan more so than an ending. So maybe that's what you mean. But it's... I don't know. It was just certain moments with Jimmy, really, that Jimmy... Because there's even panels where it looks like he has, like, the comb over. And then there's other moments that he looks like, you know, what they're doing right now with, like, Riverdale, with, like, Archie Comics, where it looks like he has, like, that faux hawk. I'm like, guys, yeah, like, figure out what you're doing with him. But again, they probably just think that because it's not a main panel, they're not really paying attention to it. But I really like Jimmy Olsen as a character. So, because to me, I think Jimmy plays such a big role in Superman's mythos, and people just think of him as a photographer. But he's more than that, and that's why I'm really excited about this this maxi-series. I don't know if I'm more excited that Jimmy Olsen's getting a maxi-series or that Matt Fraction is doing work at DC Comics. It's probably Matt Fraction, because Matt Fraction, his Invincible Iron Man run...
I'm more excited about Matt Fraction.
Probably, because his Invincible Iron Man run is probably one of my favorite comic book runs. Really? Even though I'm not the biggest fan of, like, Salvador La Roca's art, but his run was awesome.
And, you know, one thing that I'm actually, like, now that I'm actually looking at Jimmy here at the last part of the book, he looks like he's, like, 12 years younger.
I feel like he's been drawn very inconsistently. And I don't know if it's because of... You know, I don't know if this is a thing that, you know, Steve Epting just has this look for him, but then there's another artist has a different look. But there's got to be somewhat of a similarity, because he looks like he's like a 14-year-old kid from the... Like, if he played in The Sandlot, like if he was in The Sandlot movie. Like, he looks like Smalls. Like, if you've seen Sandlot.
Yeah.
Like, he legit looks like Smalls. So that's kind of my... You know, my thing, because I've always thought of, yes, you know, Jimmy's never going to be in that stature with, like, Clark, but I always felt that he was a little bit, you know, closer to age than what you're seeing here.
Yeah.
Because here you're kind of looking at, like, the, you know, like, the pre-Flashpoint, like, the, or maybe it's the way Steve Epting, of course, he draws, but it looks like you're having, like, that older Superman, like, late 30s, early 40s kind of Superman, but you have, like, a 16-year-old Jimmy Olsen, where I always figured it would have been like maybe an older 20, like it was a little closer.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, overall, Jimmy's really been my biggest nitpick with the story. Overall, I mean, it's been okay, but I feel like a lot of these slower issues where you're not getting much, I feel like that's all leading to getting information overload during the event. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it looks gorgeous. Like, the previews, the art. I love Alex Maleev. I'm a big fan of his work. Have you ever read the book? Have you been reading Bendis' book, Pearl?
I have not. I read the first issue.
Well, that's Alex Maleev. Like, if you wanted an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's good stuff. It's very, very good. So...
It was very interesting for me with Pearl... Just because, you know, it was during the hype of Bendis coming to DC, it was something that wasn't really part of the big two because it's part of his Jinx World stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept was really cool. I just never followed it, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I mean, I the only ones I really followed was Pearl and Cover. The other one, the U.S. Murder, Inc., I read the first one. I was like, not really. Not really interested in it, and the other one, which one? Is it Scarlet? The girl that's like Hunger Games or something like that.
Yeah.
That seems to be like a direct sequel to whatever he did with before. And I was like, well, I feel like I'm missing out on way too much stuff. This does not feel reader friendly at all.
Yeah, no, it's not beginner reader friendly whatsoever. It is a direct sequel, so it's like basically a volume 2 instead of a volume 1. But the only good thing about it is that DC basically agreed that anything Bendis had really published outside of the big 2, as far as like title wise for this Jinx World, that they're printing everything from it. So that volume 1 of Scarlet, they are printing that. So.
Okay.
Eventually, people can pick it up and be like, "Oh, this is, you know, you can read it more like a prequel."
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally down to read it because I like those kind of worlds. you know, when just kind of this world that's all destroyed and it's beat up and there's revolutions and there's undergrounds. And I kind of like that kind of stuff. And Bendis is a writer that I really enjoy reading. So I'm all for it. But talking about a book that I am all for, and this book, it is just nuts.
This book was legitimately insane. I read it last night when I got home from work, and I legitimately had like a jaw-dropping moment for this book.
Well, do you know what book I'm talking about?
I'm hoping that I know what this book is
about. All right, go ahead and let's see.
Are you talking about Detective?
Huh?
Are you talking about Detective?
Yes, I was talking about Detective.
Okay, cool. Man, see, we are on the same wavelength.
No, because for a second, man, I didn't know if you were going to be talking about Dial H because of what happened this summer at the end.
Oh, yeah.
That's why, sure. I was like, oh, okay. All right, let's see. Because you just like went in there 100%, like you knew exactly which book I was talking about. I was like, oh, geez. Okay. I was curious if you were going to get it. Dude, Detective Comics, and this is what issue, 1004? This made the reveal a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed what Peter Tomasi... I got to say, that first panel, though, I know you've been talking about you love the way Brad Walker draws Batman. I did not like the way Batman looked in that first panel.
He does look like he's an old man.
Yeah, it kind of looks... Like that was not a wasn't a great angle, but besides that, big fan. I kind of like 100% understand now Astrid's motivations, but it's what's crazy is just like how she got to those motivations, and
when you think about it,
yeah.
What's his name? Arkham. Her father is technically to blame.
100%.
As we read at the end, which is totally messed up.
Yes. And this is as simple as Arkham, he meets a girl, a woman named Ingrid, and they're working together with this asylum, and they had, you know, they had a goal in mind. She legitimately and... you know, she has a great heart, and she really wanted to help these people. There was no other kind of ulterior motives in regards to what she was trying to do, or let's just drug them up and just keep them in their cell. No, she legitimately wanted to. And every villain that you know, every rogue knew that. They can sense that from her, from how good her heart was, that they ultimately fell in love. And Jeremiah and Ingrid opened up this, you know, they opened this up, and they had a vision, and you saw what this vision was. And there was a moment that the prison, Arkham Asylum, was getting new prisoners coming in. Here she is, she's pregnant, a riot kind of breaks out, and she is getting ready to, probably one of the worst things, one of the worst ways to, I would assume, to give birth is to be in a asylum, thinking that you might die. You're away from your husband, and your husband is literally looking at this riot and knowing that you're in there somewhere, and he feels absolutely helpless. But the one thing that you get, the biggest surprise that I was not expecting, was, because especially when you see it the first hand, is all you see is the Joker smiling and slapping the baby's bottom like they do sometimes, you know, to kind of get them to start crying. I was like, oh my God. Like, what did the Joker do?
Exactly. Dude, that's what, like, that was the jaw-dropping moment, is when you see Joker with that, like, methodical, like, grin slapping the baby. I was like, oh no, this is going to be so bad.
Yes.
And it actually turns out to be good in a weird way.
Very weird, because you're legitimately seeing the baby getting swaddled. I'm like, wait a second, who's swaddling this baby? I see multiple hands, and then...
And
Oh my gosh.
You actually you learn through Arkham telling the story that every one of the Batman rogues were protecting Ingrid and Astrid at this point.
Yep.
And Clayface and Grundy were basically the muscle that were, like, keeping all the other rioters away from
And him. In the background, from what we're not seeing right now, is that because they were so understaffed, Batman actually did what he always does, which is he goes in and he starts taking care of all the prisoners. So in this moment, yes, you're seeing it's beautiful, but really strange considering we know who these characters are, protecting this woman and the baby while Batman's doing what he always does. And it's because of that moment with Batman beating everybody up, throwing his batarangs, doing all that kind of stuff. There was a little bit of, I guess you could say, collateral damage with one batarang that was just hanging around.
Again, another jaw-dropping moment. And I legit thought this was going to turn for the worst. Like, because when you see that panel, you automatically make the assumption, holy crap, it was a misfire, you know? Like, I legit thought, oh, he attempted to hit Clayface, and, you know, that's what was going to happen.
That's what I thought it was Batman.
Yeah.
I thought Batman.
And then you learn.
But I thought, that it because was in some... a moment, I actually thought that the baby was going to get hit too. Because if you see the photo when she's actually getting hit, I mean, that's like directly going to like where the baby's head was.
Yeah.
So I figured that there had to have been something where she got absolutely messed up being a baby and getting like head trauma from the batarang, which is why you're hearing her speak like a knight and doing all this kind of stuff, because she just got kind of like messed up. But we know that that's not the case. But it showed kind of the how much she felt to these people. Not only did they protect her, but you saw their reaction when she died. Grundy, angry Solomon got.
Yeah, Grundy grabbed the inmate he was the one that actually had the batarangs that were kind of left over while Batman, because Batman saw that some inmates escaped, like outside of the asylum, so he went outside to round them up. While this other inmate found these batarangs probably on the floor or stuck in the wall or whatever, and he was the one that was throwing them. And it cost him his life. Grundy legitimately crushed his head.
Yep.
And Arkham said, you know, before the guards could even round everybody up, the rogues just walked into their cell, like, extremely saddened by what had happened. And I'm just, like, it blows my mind how these psychotic criminals that fight Batman on a day-to-day basis, basically, could have such compassion for a legitimate human being.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that, you know, Arkham wanted to show Astrid, you know, what he was doing and the importance of it. And you see how Astrid found little secret hallways and crawl spaces and learned basically the entire blueprint of Arkham. And you see she's reading a story to Joker at one point.
Yeah, where she refers Arkham to, like, her castle.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, so you want to be a princess? And she's like, no. I'm going to be a knight, and I'm going to protect everybody.
Yeah, she's like, I want to protect the castle and, like, the kingdom. So because of, like, that medieval type-ish kind of book, that has kind of like formed her. But in the meantime, she has only, anytime she sees Batman, she only sees Batman in like small spurts, where the way that she hears, because she's not only is she being fed the information by all these rogues about Batman, so clearly she's not getting the correct information from the rogues gallery of what kind of like who Batman is and what is it that he's doing, because they're refer to him out of fear, because they're, you know, they're scared of Batman. But then the little times that she does see Batman in those quick spurts, he's like, it shows her looking at a crack in the window, and he's beating someone to a pulp where she's just seeing blood all over his fist, and then he just leaves. But then this is where kind of like when we're getting to that point that, you know, that you were talking about, which is she runs into old video. She gets access to old videos because she wanted to see what happened the day that her mother died. And now she learned mm-hmm. the truth, which was she sees all these rogues actually protecting her. And she sees that her mother is dead. She's laying on the ground in blood with the baby crying. And the murder weapon was a batarang. And that's where you see really cool action shots where this is where you get like the, you know, that the training montage in a video and like in a movie. Uh-huh. This is like where you're getting that moment. And then we find out that even the even bigger twist was that Jeremiah Arkham never told her daughter the truth. And he just went along with the lie that Batman was the one who did it because he was too scared to tell her, you know, whose fault it was.
Yeah, so messed up.
Yeah.
I legitimately don't understand that, like, at all. Like, I understand that, like...
I guess he must have just thought that it was never going to get to that point where she might want to... You know, because I don't think that you will grow knowing that, you know, your kid is going to grow up to want to become a knight and actually try to kill people and overtake Gotham. But in the meantime, I mean, it's got to be really tough to have something like this. Because, you know, you never know what he was going through. So it's like, I can kind of see like why it's just too hard to kind of open up a wound again, like reopen a wound. But I'm like, damn, like this is like for somebody that works so hard in like in psychology and doing all this kind of stuff, the ramifications of just constantly being lied to, that's got to be like a big deal.
So I just want to stop you right there. If you look at this issue of Detective Comics and you see where she is looking through that small hole and you see the blood and everything.
Yeah, let me get back to it. Yeah.
We have seen this before. This was at the back end of Action Comics 1000. It was the first introduction to the Arkham Knight.
All right. Well, guess what? I have. I just so happen to have a Detective Comics 1000 issue here with me.
So you're gonna see the Jason Fabik art with like the big spread with Batman, Catwoman, Joker, like all of them. Then you're gonna see the Amanda Connor art. And then right after the Amanda Connor art, it goes into this picture of the Batman punching somebody, but it has a white cloth instead of the yellow that you see. But instead of the blue eye of Astrid, you see the green eye. So, continuity, I'm calling BS on, but it's the exact panel. It says, I have seen him close as holding your own hand to your face. And I have seen him from afar through the eyes of others. Stories told in whispers. Stories told in confidence. Stories told in secret places. Shared perspectives with one pure connection. So she was talking at that time about all the rogues at Arkham.
Interesting. Nice. Okay, yeah, I'm seeing it here. Yeah, same bullet. I mean, the eyeball thing, yeah, with it being blue and green, man, how do you mess that up that bad? Well, both, actually. Wow, that's... Because I'm even trying to look at, like, the spurts of blood to see if maybe this was just a different occasion, and she has just seen... Because, you know, this could be... multiple times that she has peeked through this hole to see him. So I can kind of maybe forgive the yellow and the white, but in reality, it's the It's the eye color, which is
yeah, her eye color.
That one. I'm like, man, how do you?
But it's legit. Her. That's the same panel.
Did you just recently look at Detective for you to remember that, or did you remember that panel?
No, I just looked at it and I was like, I've seen this before. Where have I seen this before?
Man, I wish I had that. I don't have that kind of recollection when it comes to comics. I never have like this eagle eye stuff. That sucks, man. I envy it. Like, I wish I like very rarely, or maybe I do and I'm just giving myself crap. But there, man, I see something like that. I'm like, dude, I wish I can kind of just see a panel and be like, this is from Detective 1000. I hate you, man.
That's intense.
But that's good. That like that's a nice little connecting point there.
That's kind of cool. Well, I think it's more cool that like her dialogue in, now that we know that it's a her, her dialogue in Action Comics 1000 is legitimately connected to her backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And so for everybody who doesn't know how comics run, these books are made months in advance.
Yeah.
Some books are put on a little bit of a tighter schedule, you know, put onto a guideline of maybe like half a month or whatever, depending on how quickly they want to push a book. But that is awesome. I really appreciate that. That is really, really cool.
Now, the question that I have is, you see, like, at that very last panel, when they're like, well, not the very last, but one of the last ones, before she ends up, and it was kind of cool seeing, like, Arcane there. But
oh, yeah, yeah.
When you see her, like, looking at the castle, do you think of it as, do you think that she's actually still looking at things in the eyes of the child, and she's just been stuck in that prism? So she sees it as a castle, kind of like, and I need to protect it. But then it goes, you know, right next to when she's telling everyone, like, forward, Knights of the Sun, and you actually see where she's at. Like, it kind of makes me think, like, where, like, what are we, still dealing with a little child just in, you know, in somebody that has grown up?
I could definitely see that. Just because if you, I mean, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a therapist of any kind. But just things that, you know, you kind of learn through school, through documentaries, things like that. I could definitely see the influence of the one of her favorite books plus the stories of all of these psychotic characters like the rogues
mm-hmm.
of Batman talking to her. I could definitely see her, like, or them even molding this Arkham Knight into thinking, hey, this is how the world should be, and her seeing that through, you know, her book and her, through the eyes of the child she once was.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to this next issue because now I feel like I have a really good connecting point with who Astrid is as a character, and now I'm really interested to see what this, you know, this battle is going to be, like, you know, this next confrontation, because now we know, now Batman knows who he's dealing with. He knows the motivations, so I feel like he's going to have to use this trauma, honestly, and get it back to her to kind of throw her off her game. Because,
yeah.
You know, we can only think that ever since she's learned that when she was like a young teenager, she's been preparing for this moment. So she's had years of preparation, while Batman literally has just the story. So I'm curious, but I'm liking the threat that Astrid presents. And also what's cool about it is that I feel like we're going to find out maybe she also presents more potential when it comes to Arkham Asylum, because there can now be many hidden passageways or this kind of stuff that we've never seen before, and she can kind of present that. So I would love to see even a story with her where we're getting a little bit more of Arkham Asylum, because I feel like, mm-hmm. you know, you always see the same areas. So I'm totally down for this. So I'm cool. But okay, so you and me, Dial H number one, Dial H number two. I think we were pretty unanimously when it's come out saying like that was like one of our favorite books. Did book three, is book three a continuation with that? Or did book three kind of, you know, let you down a bit? What were your thoughts?
Dial H 3 moved at a little bit of a slower pace for me.
Mm-hmm.
This was no longer a story of Miguel, though. I think that's why. We take a little bit of a halt to tell the story of Summer that has kind of been a mystery for us through this entire, you know, the two issues that we've read. I say this entire thing like it's been like 16 issues or something.
Yeah.
We finally learn what she hated most about, where was the town that they were in?
Devil's something?
Devil's Canyon or something like that?
Devil's Canyon, I believe.
Okay, yeah. So we finally learn what she hated most about that. And it was...
And it has absolutely nothing to do with the city.
No. No, it had everything to do with her mother.
Yeah.
And how she was raised and how, basically, she wasn't raised.
Mm-hmm.
We see this very, what are they called? There's a TV show about it that my wife sometimes watches.
Yeah, kind of like Dance Moms or something like that.
Yeah, Dance Moms, the pageant moms, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very stereotypical that, like, the moms are like, oh, you know, the important thing is that you win, not that you have fun, you know, things like that when it comes to things like this.
Yeah.
And you see that it's very much this way with this mother of Summer. And you slowly, in between this, you also see that Miguel and Summer are trying to get superheroes to notice them so that way they have, you know, somebody to talk to about how, you know, they need help and everything else. So they're trying to get a hold of the Flash because they're in Central City. And I think this is hilarious because they're like, oh, you know what? Let's go rob a convenience store. And they go to this convenience store and they're like, oh, yeah, underage drinking. We're going to steal these. And the guy's like, that's root beer.
That's actually funny. Like seeing them because it sounded like kind of like I was thinking of like the way that you hear Billy Batson like in the Shazam movie when he's trying to like he's just trying this fake like your perception of what a superhero should sound like. Hello, yes, I am. So I feel like they were just trying to do like, hey, we're going to steal from you.
Like we're bad guys. We're just gonna you know, we're not gonna just, you know, take these. We're gonna steal them, you know, kind of thing. Which I thought was hilarious, and you know they even faked being like a family member of the Rogues. Summer was playing the Mirror Madam, where they actually stole the rearview mirror off of the van that they've been driving.
Yeah,
which I thought was funny, and they tried to post a video so that way, like you know, it would be breaking news, and the video would somehow get to Barry Allen or something, you know. But it ended up being like, oh, just three people viewed the video, which is super hilarious because that's just, you know, convenience, right?
Yeah.
But we see that the police officer that has stolen the phone is actually talking on the phone with none other
than the operator.
Which, once again, I could not read his dialogue without thinking of... his name.
Were you also thinking Goldblum?
Yes.
Yeah.
After your fan casting, I can't think of any other voice for the operator than Jeff Goldblum. So it makes perfect sense. It's awesome. But they notice that somebody hit the dial H because everybody who has, you know, used it before, has like this notification, basically.
Yeah, they sense it. Like, they can feel it.
They can feel when somebody uses it. So this police officer used it and has become the bluebird of happiness. And the last time I read a book this crazy was Batman New 52, when you had to flip the book.
Yes.
And I feel like that's what you're going to have to do here. But of course, we have digital copies. So instead of flipping the book, I had to flip my head. So, so wacky. So cool.
I love the fact that it was trippy.
Oh, yeah. Because,
like, with the happy, and he's like, burn confusion in the sun of bliss, and just even like the dialogue. But I also found it very interesting where, in the middle of everything that you're reading within the happiness, like in this moment of bliss, is when Summer is kind of, it seems like she's remembering
the like worst parts of her
the
life.
The worst parts of it, and it kind of seems like that then transforms into it being like a double first appearance of like a Lolo kick your butt. Lolo kick you. Sorry. Yeah, Lolo kick you, and you get a very cool, it feels like a Sean Murphy, like punk rock Jesus kind of vibe, and she looks very punk rock. And you're getting, this is kind of like those moments where you feel like there's many panels that you're like, wow, the art's everywhere.
And let me just say, because I do believe, let me go back, all of this is still Sam Humphries.
No, yeah, this is Sam Humphries.
Every change of art style is still Sam Humphries.
No. Sam and Humphries is the writer. He's the writer. Joe Quinones or...
Yeah, Quinones, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the artist on this.
Yeah, I feel like there's one moment, though. I feel like during the really, really trippy times, when you're seeing some of the backstory with Summer, where the art looks a little bit more not as clear, there is another artist on this book, and his name is escaping me. I think it's like Aris Devin Dane.
Dane.
Yeah, but he only is doing these moments where, like, for example, when they say Lolo kick your butt, and you're seeing this, the way Summer looks here looks completely different than some of the earlier prequel stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's his work. So when you're seeing like the split of the pages, that's more Dane. But Quinones is definitely doing the trippy stuff and all the current stuff and some of the and the past stuff minus Dane.
I love the art style of Lolo and her design and every like the colors with it. I love all of it.
Yeah.
This book has quite honestly has to be the most colorful book I have ever read. In recent time.
Well, definitely within Big Two.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for me, even though it's been a while, I feel like I haven't seen it lately, but, like, to me, nothing beats color like Paper Girls. I don't know if you've read Paper Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that, to me, just exudes paper. But I would say, in terms of Big Two, Dial H or maybe Naomi have the best colors.
Yeah.
Like, the best usage of colors
that I've
seen.
Like, I honestly love the fact that they, Quinones, like, there's this part where, you know, they defeat this, bluebird, Lolo does.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, Lolo is driving the car with Miguel in there. And you can clearly see the clash of art styles, but it still looks so good.
Yes.
When Lolo is driving the van.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, like, I guess you kind of got an inkling of it in last issue. But even though it's Lolo, it's still Summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she is still, like, able to talk to Miguel as Summer, even though she is Lolo.
Yeah.
And then you see that, you know, she's taking a back road to Detroit.
Yeah.
to get, you know, somewhere. Like, I don't know if it's a back road to get to Metropolis or a back road to get somewhere that will get Superman's attention. But we see that, you know, we see the operator. We see that he feels very much responsible for the Thunderbolt Club. But something that we forgot to mention in the very beginning of this book,
which is Robbie Reed. I was waiting for the reveal, then to kind of bring up the beginning.
Yeah, we see this the operator take off his hood and say, "I am Robbie Reed, and I will stop Mr. Thunderbolt." And we see Robbie Reed at the very beginning of this book.
Yeah, because at first I was like, okay, because even this book, it says, like, dial V for hero. Like, it doesn't even, and it's like V for villain. Like, that's, like, what the cover. Yeah. And I was like, okay, so I feel like we're going to be getting kind of like an origin story. So I was really curious to see between Robbie Reed or Joey who was going to be the actual operator. The way that they showed Robbie Reed the most, I was thinking that because of the cover, that Robbie Reed was actually Thunderbolt.
Thunderbolt. Yeah, same here.
But now I'm starting to think that maybe Robbie Reed, well, now we know Robbie Reed's the operator, but now I'm curious who Joey is. Like, is Joey just a random kid that is just making fun of him because he's just a massive nerd? Or is that it? Because now, I mean, because he literally revealed the hero dial right in front of him when he saw Grodd. So I feel like Joey is going to see, like, wow, he's actually, like, a hero. Like, I want a piece of that, and maybe that's where you get the greed and the envy and pretty much all the bad characteristics that some humans possess, and that's what turns Joey into, and maybe that's why he's saying it's more of my doing, because he probably, instead of doing it in secret, he just did it right there in the open because he felt that there was no time to waste. So yeah. I'm really curious to know more of the story, but I love it, man. It was this was a great. This is like a book I didn't even care about. I mean, I love the Dial H that happened with. The person has such a strange name during the something Cherry Meville, something Neville, something like that. Ah, crap! During the New 52, there was a Dial H.
Oh yeah, I have it on my computer. I just need to read it.
Who's this person? Now it's gonna bother me. Let me see if I do Dial H Neville. Let me, am I gonna get here? Because it's really gonna bother me, and I'm not getting anything. That sucks.
Here, okay, hold on.
Wait. 2012 series, China Meville. Yeah. Okay, I knew it. I was like, man, this during New 52. That was such a great book. And now I was like, so that book was so good, but honestly, my biggest doubt, even though I have enjoyed some of Sam Humphrey's work, I didn't know if he would be able to do it until I read issue one. And then I'm like, okay, no, this book seems to be more Humphrey's speed because he is kind of wacky.
Yeah.
And he's eccentric and stuff like that. So I dug it, man. This book was great. And honestly, so was the last book that we're going to talk about, which is The Flash, number 71, which was chapter 2 of year 1. I thought this was... It's always kind of cool when you're seeing a younger version of yourself that's not confident, that's not aware of who they really are and who we know that they are. So seeing, like, two versions of themselves you're kind of seeing the young person seeing themselves and being absolutely petrified, saying, there's no way I can live up to this. But then you're seeing, like, the seasoned person go, like, wow, I remember how innocent I was. So I feel like it works both ways.
And let me just say, year one has been a breath of fresh air.
100% for Flash. Because Flash has been rough. Compared
to everything else that's been going on with the Flash recently. It was a quick read.
Very fast.
To be completely honest, not much happened in this book.
Nope.
To be honest, nothing huge other than the reveal of how monstrous Turtle looks now. He did not used to look like that.
No, yeah.
But like you said, we, you know, from the ending of last issue to beginning of this one, we have a very cool interaction between young Barry and older Barry. And, you know, and he's kind of giving him this, like, hey, you know, I need to know exactly who you are and where you are from, mm-hmm. as far as timeline-wise. Because he even says, I need to know you're from the correct timeline.
Yes.
So, you know, this older age Barry is well-versed in the multiverse and multiple timelines and alternate timelines, things like that. So he asked him questions, you know. And this part I actually like. It was Iris, okay. Wally. What about Wallace? He's like, wait, isn't that the same thing?
Which is a nice, you know, poking fun, because it's true.
Yeah. And then talks about August, and he says a friend at the CCPD. And let me just say, the attention to detail in art in this is amazing. Because if you look at older Barry's face when he asks about August, we now know
mm-hmm.
that he's asking about Godspeed.
Yes.
And so you kind of see how sad he is, and the younger Barry is just like, oh, he's just a friend. And yep. so, like, that hurt me a little bit. But seeing all this, seeing, you know, kind of this older Barry teach him in a small way, and you even find out that, hey, you know, we're stuck in a loop. You know, this happened to me when I was first starting. Now it's happening to you. I had hoped that maybe somehow I had broken this, but, you know, I'm going to get you through it.
Yeah.
So we find a very broken cosmic treadmill. He fixes it, and it seems that Barry is, you know, going back into the past. And basically what we see from there is he doesn't want to be the Flash. He doesn't feel confident enough to live through all that.
Well, you got to think that that's a huge... I can only imagine the brain overload. You get struck by lightning. You're like, you wake up. You got these powers. You're like, what the heck's going on with me? I run so fast. I'm now in the future, and I'm seeing myself. I'm seeing myself make tornadoes, you know, do all this kind of crazy gadgetry. That's got to be petrifying as hell. And it's like, dude, look at this. Is like the end of the world. Who's this turtle guy? He's got a whole army. The world looks, you know, to then get back. I mean, I would be scared as hell too. But we
live in a world that, like, we know everything about superheroes. So, like, everybody assumes, oh yeah, you know, when anybody gets powers, they're just going to be a superhero. Yeah. But, like, this legitimately says, because at one point Barry even says, hey, we have read the same comics. We know the importance of time and what you can and cannot do when, you know, messing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very informative, and it's kind of meta how they do that. Mm-hmm. But you're totally
and
right.
And it's kind of funny when they're talking about time, like, we read the same comics. It's kind of funny that this kind of also came out, like, similar to, like, Endgame.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
So one of the things that I really enjoyed about this issue is that they didn't hesitate. This wasn't going to be, like, we still don't know what happens in issue, the following chapter. But based on how you see the end, it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. I'm kind of happy that this is not we're going to have to deal with a whole issue of Barry just doubting himself, wanting to rid himself of the Flash. No, he immediately saw the threat. He saw that turtle came. He's like, wow, this is actually happening. And then, boom, like, you see him come, and he kind of looks like New 52 Superman, but now just like the Flash version. I love that it's who you know, who, like, the qualities that you know of Barry Allen came right away, where this guy was like, there's no way I could be a superhero. He sees a threat, and the first thing he wants to do is he looks at Iris, which I love, because he sees that Iris, even without anything, she's so brave, and she's willing mm-hmm. to jump into the fire. And I think there's even that moment where he says, like, she's awesome, which was cool. Like, him seeing, you know, how, like, it's an inspiration to him. Like, it's, because it kind of makes it feel like, you know, seeing Iris's bravery and just doing what is right and doing what you have to do is what's important there. And then you kind of see, because that last panel, that last page is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, so gorgeous. I love it.
Yeah, which makes me really interested to see how they're going to do it, considering he doesn't have a mask and he's literally legit right in front. But again, this is going to be, because since he's going against Turtle, you would think that he's going to slow down, where he's pretty vulnerable. So that's why I'm really curious to see how they're going to do it, because obviously we know that Iris doesn't know. So we'll see. But I like that moment. He's like, hey, when Iris asks, say yes. I was like, yeah, that was cool. Because you can't really give details, but he's like, hey, if she asks, just say yes. I thought that was nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. This was a great book. Howard Porter, to me, is like the epitome of like the Flash artist.
Oh, yeah. Same here. I was not... When I first started with Howard Porter's Flash stuff, I didn't really... I wasn't on board 100%. But after seeing what he could do with just the aspects of Barry Allen and the Flash and everything else, it is really, really cool looking. So I really appreciated it. Like I said, breath of fresh air. I can't wait to see what comes next. But that's actually all the books we have. We don't have a fifth one, just because there wasn't really a lot of books other than these four that really interested us too much. So out of the four, what would you say your top for this week was, or what was your lineup for this week?
I would say number one is Detective Comics. Number two is Flash. Number three is Dial H. Number four, Action.
Nice. That is exactly my same lineup. Detective, Flash, Dial H, or Dial V for this issue. And true. Then Action Comics 1011.
Yeah. So I thought, I mean, this was for the books that we wanted to read, I mean, these four books weren't like, we weren't forced to read them. There's the one thing we don't want to do is say like, hey, we're going to read 6-7 books, but we're going to be forced to read some. Like we're trying to do like the books that we actually really want to read, and, you know, and just go that way. Even if we don't like it, I mean, clearly if we don't like a book that we actually read, we'll talk about it. But it's kind of like we don't want to force ourselves to read something and we have no interest in reading it, because then, I mean, we're sucking the fun out of it for us, but also I'm sure you guys will also hear that we're not enjoying talking about the book. So we're trying to avoid that as well. But with that being said, yeah, we're gonna wrap up this show. Clay, we're gonna Well, what were you gonna say?
One thing that we always need to do is we need to have a question.
True.
For this episode.
True.
So
I forgot about that. See, this is what happens when you're gone for a week. I don't remember formats of the show.
Oh, man. Questions. You know, we already did a Dial H question.
We did. All right, let's see. Okay, well, in terms of, I mean, with this tease, with this Leviathan tease, they've been teasing like a lot of like the superheroes that we know, but it looks like they're going to play like a big part in terms of, are they actually Leviathan? Are they not? Like, why are they being teased? Like, what are your theories? Like, do you see one of our superheroes that we know and love turning for the worst? And if so, who? Because, I mean, we kind of got a tease with you know, your favorite issue, with your favorite section of the Year of the Villains with Barbara. So I'm kind of curious, like, how many of our heroes are going to get tempted? Or, like, are they going to get to a point of, like, breaking?
Well, and one other thing,
because it makes me feel like that's going to happen to Green Arrow, now that he doesn't have his book. Like, that makes me wonder, and with him dealing with what happened with Roy, I'm still, you know, there's a lot of possibilities that we can see one of our beloved.
Well, there was one thing that we didn't really touch up on Action was there was a report that elongated man was arrested. So we will see.
Could be. Could be.
So that would be interesting.
I don't want it to be elongated. I mean, because I always think of like Identity Crisis. So I don't. This whole Ralph and Sue Dibney thing. I'm like, oh, don't let it be him. He's gone through enough. But it could be.
It would be interesting.
Yeah.
And then, sure. Of course, you know, the whole thing with the Guardian. I'd be interested to see if they were able to pull him into the mix.
Yeah. Well, so. Time will tell. But I'm excited. I'm excited for the future of what DC is doing. And we'll go from there. But Clay, where can they find you, buddy?
Of course, you can find me at Fanboy Clay on Twitter. I have an Instagram. I'm trying to, you know, use Instagram. I haven't used Instagram in like 4 years, so it's not much is there. So just follow me on Twitter. I also have a show called Fanboy Comics Podcast, which a new episode just dropped, I believe, 2 days ago. That was really cool because it was with my padre, my dad. Go listen to that show. It's going to be here in the same network of Nation of Nerds and Comic Book Legion. And it also has a Twitter page at Fanboy Comics Pod is where you can follow them. Mark, what about you?
Well, you can find me at Mark Fosses. I still haven't changed my Twitter because I've actually forgotten to until just this moment. but besides that, you can also find me. I mean, me and Clay, we're always chatting, and we kind of take turns just running the CB_Legion, which is our show's title page, Twitter page. And also, we are part of the Nation of Nerd Network, so also at Nation of Nerds. Not much new information goes there. That's more of a like of a plug of just, you know, kind of sharing everything within our network. But outside of that, yeah, we are good. Clay, do we got anything else?
Did you plug the website?
I thought I did with the writers, but if I did not, yes, comicbooklegion.com. If you're interested in being a contributor, let us know. You can either contact Clay or myself, and we would love to kind of give you all the deets. It's a lot of fun. It's a cool community with a great group of guys where we're just talking comics. And, well, we talk everything, but, you know, mainly
comics, sports.
Yeah, sports, video games, whatever. But comics is mainly the conversations that we have. And it's a lot of fun. So if you're interested in doing that, just let us know. And, you know, we'll provide the deets.
All right. But I believe that is it.
Man, I'm rusty, man. This is tough, man. Podcasting's tough. Anyways, all right. Well, Clay, pleasure as always. Thank you all for listening and for your support. And we will talk to you guys next week. See ya.
All right. Good one.